City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We are talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Alexander Benz.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This Queer Cast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Bud Light keeps it coming.
American Airlines, offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow.
And by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com.
You're listening to the Windy City Queer Cast show number 259, the election show. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Alexandra Billings.
And go Obama.
Obama, Barack Obama.
God. I know it was one moment that you wished you were back here in Chicago, perhaps.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? Eric McCool called, Stephen Rader, everybody. I got email, Mitchell, Fain, everybody was texting me like crazy. I mean, it was nuts. I was very jealous.
I was with Mitchell. We were crying like babies, like absolute babies, Mitchell and Kelly and I. I mean, what a night. We should say Barack Obama has become the 44th president of the United States of America, the first African-American ever to be elected to the presidency. It was a slam dunk landslide. Slam dunk is his good luck basketball term, I would say. But what a night. And, you know, Alex, I remember it had to have been over a year ago, you and I standing on my porch. We were about to record a podcast. It was when we kind of thought Barack was going to enter the election. You and I, early on, of course, were both big Hillary supporters, and that was a bit scary having him enter the waters. You know, would he dilute the party? Would he take away Hillary's moment, which he did? But I mean, I think she then in part made his an even bigger moment in some ways. I mean, it has been a really long time since we've all been living with this election.
Yeah. It's you know, I'll tell you something. His speech was tremendous. But I just saw this picture of he and the new first lady and their kids in the Rose Garden. And I just kind of – I'm sort of sitting here going, is this actually happening?
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't have an African-American experience in my history, so I can't even begin to imagine what that is for that particular culture. But I know, having grown up with very racist parents and you're either racist or you're not – in a household that – condemned black people, and to sit here and see that picture as a reality in a country that I live in is extraordinary. It's extraordinary.
Yeah. I mean, watching them walk out last night as a family unit and have that moment, and then to watch Biden and his family walk out and all of them there, it seemed so American to me in a way I've never felt American. To watch all of those people, all of those generations, all on one stage with you know, hundreds of thousands of people watching on the lawn and tens of millions of people watching around the world.
Well, and I'll tell you the truth. The interesting thing, too, is that the Conservative Party has got to rethink. They have to rethink themselves. They have to, because their moments of holding on to the past are sort of gone now. Yeah. And so they've really got to look in the mirror and figure out exactly what it is, who they represent and what they are, because their time, and I don't mean the Conservative Party as a whole, their time is over, but the far right, their time is really over. The world is changing. Well, not the world is changing. The world has changed. And I mean the world. I mean everywhere. Pictures from Australia, Japan, Kenya, Israel, everyone.
Iran.
Afghanistan,
everywhere.
Everyone is celebrating. And so these people who are stuck in the 1950s or 40s or wherever it is that these poor souls are stuck, they've really got to take a hard look at what it is they value and why.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting too, because I have just talked about this on a podcast, but with Kelly, the last one, the pre-election podcast. And, you know, we sometimes are in such a Democratic blue state liberal bubble. You know, I mean, I have a gay podcast. I live openly with my partner. I live in Illinois, in the city of Chicago, where I feel safe and protected. And I have a lot of rights as a GLBT person. If I look at myself, you know, I'm a Caucasian woman, so I'm in a woman minority. I'm in a gay minority. I'm by race, I guess, in the mainstream, whatever that means. But, you know, I just so forget these pockets of our country. And traveling home last week for my grandmother's 100th, which I've been talking about now for a really long time. But in the last show, I spoke about the fact that I found myself at a Halloween party in the backyard with no Democrats. I mean, it was so McCain Palin. I was in the hub of the RNC for the state of Tennessee. And I mean that literally. Like, this couple, he is a fourth generation delegate to the Republican National Convention. And I just forget, you know, the fear, the hatred, the ignorance, probably not in that order, that exists still in the U.S. And I mean that not because I think that's all Republicans. I don't at all. I think we definitely have different agendas, but it was just a lot of what I was surrounded by. And I know people who flat out said, I mean, they were not my generation, thank God. So it lets me know that hopefully times are changing, or maybe they just wouldn't say this out forthright, but said, I cannot in good conscience vote for a black man. I cannot do it. And, you know, and I'm hoping that after he and his family live in the White House, and when we see what large numbers of young voters, he went from having in the last election, Kerry got 3% of the 18 through 29 year olds. And, you know, that was 3% of who voted for him. And in this election for Obama, it was 13%. And that's a pretty good and 4-year leap as to the change that he conjured across, you know, the United States. But I still feel, you know, he's going to have some real ground to cover for these people who are terrified that a black man is in the White House, who cannot, it just doesn't connect. There is such a disconnect for them. And yet it will happen. And it is happening as we speak.
Now, did someone, that's really fascinating. Did someone actually say that to you? Like, I can't in good conscience. Did somebody actually say that to you?
Oh, I've heard that from many people. And my parents heard it from a lot of people, because my parents were one of the few families that had an Obama sign in our yard until it was stolen. So there were very few Obama signs in Cleveland, Tennessee.
Well, I guess my question is, if somebody actually said that to you, did you say why? Did you ask why?
Well, no, they didn't say it to me in a way that I was face to face with them and I could respond. And, you know, I think for my parents, it's just at this point, you know, you can't. It's kind of like thumping with a Bible thumper. And when you grow up in that environment, you just kind of know you have to lead by example. You just have to be a witness. You just have to make it not about race. And so to sit there and argue with them about something that is just fundamentally about race, there's no way to argue that. I mean, they're basically saying I'm a racist. So what are you going to say? Well, don't be a racist.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean,
sure.
And
oh, absolutely.
Good friends, you know, my mother has very dear friends who said that to her. And, you know, and I mean, I know that that is a very common thread. You know, I mean, Tennessee easily went to McCain. But, you know, it's a very common thread of we still have such inherent racism in this country. And I think that the rest of the world has known that. Our politics have supported that. That other than is, you know, is anti-American. That Muslim, you know, it's like McCain. I mean, God love him. I thought his concession speech last night was the best moment of the election for him.
I thought it was too.
And I'm saddened by that because yeah. I saw in his concession speech the man that, you know, really, I remember when I thought it was going to be him 8 years ago with Gore. I remember being on Les By Gay Radio and saying, you know what? He's okay on our issues. So if we lose after Clinton, which everybody thought, you know, we might just because people might want that change again. I remember talking, and maybe you were on some of these shows. I don't remember, but I just remember thinking, like, he's good on GLBT issues. He's pro-choice. Socially, he's okay. We yeah. differ on some things. I really would prefer, I mean, there's some things like estate tax and other things that I could fall very Republican on.
Me
not
too.
Not on general taxes, but, you know, on estate tax, I definitely fall in line with Republicans. And so, you know, part of me was like, okay, this wouldn't be so bad. He and Gore, they're really are pretty unified. And yet I'm a loyalist as a Democrat, but I didn't feel like I would collapse in the way I did when Bush, was elected. And I knew he was so opposite what my social and political and ideological values were.
Mm-hmm.
It was beautiful to see him last night in that moment. Didn't you think?
Oh, it was amazing. You know, you're talking about McCain, right?
Yes.
Yes. I thought it was magnificent. You know, I never had, you know, it's interesting because I taught a class last night, and it was in the middle of us finding out that Obama had won. Mm. So, and you know, what I teach my students, my acting students, a lot of what I teach is philosophy. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it revolves around you have to live your life moment to moment to moment, because that's how you usually live your art, moment to moment to moment. This right. is happening and this is happening. And how do you become present, really, really, truly present in that moment? So we were sort of talking, and then in the middle of us talking, all of a sudden, horns started going off and people were screaming in the streets. I mean, I'm telling you, all hell broke loose. Mm-hmm. And I sort of, instead of talking about it, I just said, let's go outside and we can experience literally the world changing and us experiencing it and living in it moment to moment to moment. And so this massive uprising began to happen. And I remember thinking to myself, this is fantastic, this is fantastic. And then I remember thinking, I'm really sad for John McCain, because never once did I have an innate dislike for that guy. I never disliked him. There was a lot of things that I agreed with. I thought he held himself really, really well through this entire campaign. I felt he ran the wrong campaign, and he just happened to be the wrong guy at the wrong time.
Obama and he picked the wrong along. VP. Let's just really go there. I mean,
well, here's the deal. What lost it for him were a multitude of things. I don't think I personally, and this is just my opinion, I don't think we can blame Sarah Palin
for
him losing.
Oh, I don't think we can, no.
But I agree with you. Sarah Palin, in my view, is stuck again, like what we talked about at the top of this conversation. She's stuck in a very 1950s ideology that serves her really well because she's in a particular place where, you know, like you said about living in a bubble, I think she lives in the same kind of conservative bubble where what she believes is very accepted and makes sense to her.
Right.
But I think you're dealing with an America that is changing. I mean, you look at – I know we're going to talk about this later, but you look at Prop 8, which is most definitely going to happen, but it's a very, very – it's a much smaller margin of people that are voting it through than voted through Proposition 22. So the world – or the United States, pardon me, the United States of America is changing. You have two choices. You can either change with it or not. But anyway, my point about McCain is that he suddenly turned into sort of the angry grandfather in the bathrobe,
mm-hmm.
you know, screaming at the neighbors to get off the lawn.
Get
your kids, goddamn kids, off my lawn. You know, he suddenly turned into that guy.
Yeah.
And he began screaming at Obama and running away from Sarah Palin. And he just looked like he was a confused old guy who, you know, some old World War II veteran that just got confused and wandered onto the stage. And Obama just stayed on point, stayed on message. And all of a sudden, he started to sort of look shiny and new and fantastic.
And presidential.
And very presidential. And John McCain, the reason Sarah Palin, I believe, hurt John McCain is because she was a bad choice. She wasn't the wrong choice. She was a bad choice. And I think even the Republicans began to go, you know, your decision making, not that great.
Yeah.
So I think there was a multitude of reasons. And the reason his concession speech was so terrific is that he really meant it. He said to us all, look, we've had our differences. We're going to continue to have our differences. That's what I loved about what he said. Mm-hmm. He didn't say automatically all of a sudden, much like Hillary did, which really pissed me off, everything's great and everything's wonderful and aren't we one big party? He said, look, I don't agree with the guy, but here's the deal. We're in a lot of trouble. You guys voted this guy in. I'm going to stick by the president of the United States. And I'll tell you something else, Amy. These liberals that for the last 8 years have been carrying around these bumper stickers that say, he's not my president, meaning George Bush. These are a bunch of mother freaking hypocrites because these are the guys that are jumping up and down going, Obama, Obama, in your face. These guys are a bunch of hypocrites. So I'm also speaking to the liberals. They need the far left. They need to look at themselves as well. You guys who have said Bush is not my president, you guys need to rethink your political standing in your own heart.
Yeah.
And you need to look at yourself in the mirror. Take a good look at yourself and really figure out who you are.
Yeah. You know, it's exactly true. And of course, now all of the conversation between now and January 20th is going to be the transition. You know, they're saying now that Rahm Emanuel who lives like a neighborhood away from me, is probably going to be the chief of staff. You know, they're looking at who he's going to be appointing, and it's all going to be about unifying. I do think he will give some significant positions to Republicans. If I was him, I would. Republicans and independents.
So.
You know, but it was a beautiful, beautiful night. We are going to do – there is other news that has happened in the past few couple of days that we need to tell you about this week. But I have to say that the moment last night – I mean, I cried many a tear last night, and have today, even from just, you know, just the aftermath of it and continuing to see it. But, you know, I knew when Pennsylvania hit that I thought he's done it. And then when Ohio hit, I said, it's done. And Kelly walked in the door, and within, you know, then Mitchell came in, and then within probably 20 minutes, we were about to click over with the California votes coming in, and of course, you know, it was instantaneous here and around the world. But, you know, what was so moving to me was the part of his speech about the woman in Atlanta who was 106. And, you know, having just spent a lot of time with my grandmother and talking with her quite a bit And, you know, my grandmother is all there, mind, body, and spirit. And though she did not get out to go to the polls this election, she was very conscious of what this election meant. And I think that, you know, we talked today, we talked this morning, and we just giggled because we're kind of the two little Dixiecrats amongst, for a long time, my entire family. Many more now are Democratic. But, you know, and hearing her talk to me about FDR and hearing her talk to me about the Great Depression my entire life and hearing her talk to me about how this country is supposed to be a country that lifts one another up. And though I think my grandmother in her 100 years, you know, the difference between her and the woman, the only difference, I think, between her and the woman that Barack Obama was talking about was the color of their skin. They're both Southern mm-hmm. women. They're both seemingly still there in mind, body, and spirit. They've both seen the same century of America. And, you know, she just didn't believe it could happen. And in the same way that perhaps that African-American woman in Atlanta just didn't believe it would happen. Believed, she did tell me, I do believe it will be a black man before it is a woman. She had told me that many years ago. But to have that moment and to have that 100 years in this country, I mean, it's just it was a very, very moving thing that he happened to talk about his grandmother and also talk about this 100-year-old woman.
You know, it's interesting because that's really fascinating. And I never, for the last 6 months, I have never doubted that he was going to be president. I wasn't on pins and needles about this thing. I was completely confident he was going to win. And my black friends, they were the ones that were skeptical, which is really interesting.
Well, I know a lot of people who our friend Heather Schmucker, one of them, who went door to door. Who went door to door in Indiana, and other people I know, Pat Kane, and many people I was talking with who were going to Indiana. And a common thing that was said when they were, most of them were knocking on doors of inconsistent voters. Democratic, inconsistent voters. They weren't going to people to try to change minds the week before. They were going to people to just make sure they go to the polls. And it was very interesting because, and we got Indiana last night. You know, Kelly and I waited up to see about Indiana because that's her home state. And because we had known so many people who had worked so hard for Indiana. But, you know, many, many people were saying, I don't want to vote for him because I don't want him to get shot. I don't want him to die because he gets this presidency. And, you know, as I was talking with Heather, I said, you know, I hope that you said to those people, I am sure he has had, knows that, you know, the danger exists based on being the first of anything, you know, Rosa Parks, Martin Luther King, you know, all the great activists, you know, Harvey Milk. I mean, these people did not go into it blindly. It wasn't that they didn't know that they were taking dangerous acts. And God forbid, you know, today he had had massive security last night, and I'm sure they will up his detail and all of that. I mean, they've changed around his house in Chicago and all of that. But I think truly brave people, you know, we don't say to the conservative right, which has many people going into the military, you know, I mean, men and women in this country put their life on the line all the time consciously do it. You know, gay people, when they are out and proud and walk down the street holding a hand, you know, it's not that we're always tempting fate. It's that we're living our calling. We're living our authentic life. We're living our path. And his path was destined for this moment, you know?
Yeah, that's, I agree with you. I agree with you.
So
I
think it's amazing. You know, we're going to come back. There were many other election results last night. Many of them were about the gay marriage initiatives. We're going to talk about that when we come back. But let's tell you what's going on in the news and also a little bit of what's going on in the theater scene. And then we'll be back.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Blue Aluminum Bottle Maker.
Mr. Blue Aluminum Bottle Maker.
Your amazing creation allows us to keep our beer, our hands, and the Arctic ice shelf completely cool.
It's really, really cool.
The only problem we have taking a drink, removing our lips from the bottle after taking a drink.
My lips are stuck.
Sure, we need a beer this cold. Should we ever find ourselves running wind sprints at the bottom of an active volcano?
I'm on fire!
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, oh frier of the frigid. Now, can somebody please pry this bottle from my frozen hand?
Mr. Blue Aluminum Bottle Maker!
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News. The City Council in Columbus, Ohio, recently passed a motion urging state legislators to pass an anti-discrimination bill. The measure, which would ban discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity in areas such as housing and employment, was first introduced in March. However, there has been little to no action taken on the measure. Ohio's governor has said that if the bill lands on his desk, he would sign it.
Three members of the Soul Force Equality Ride were arrested and charged with trespassing after entering the campus of Southwestern Assemblies of God University. Soul Force riders travel to Christian colleges across the U.S. Their mission is to have conversations about GLBT inclusion at Christian colleges and stress that Christian places of higher learning charge their policies to allow for such inclusion. The three riders have been released.
The FBI says that hate crimes against gays were up 6% in 2007, while other hate crimes, motivated by racial or religious bias, decreased very slightly. About 7,600 hate crimes were reported in 2007, which is roughly a 1% decline from 2006.
Public health officials are investigating a Canadian hospital for reusing syringes. Health officials said that only one hospital located in Lloydminster was involved. They are currently investigating that matter, but said they are not going to be testing people for HIV and other diseases because the risk is extremely low. Health officials added that they would test if they determine it is necessary.
Remarks made by Spain's Queen Sofia have caused an uproar among the country's GLBT population. In a new biography called The Queen Up Close and penned by journalist Pilar Urbano, Queen Sofia denounces same-sex marriage. Queen Sofia also questions whether or not GLBT people should celebrate during pride parades and feel proud to be GLBT.
Jerry Lewis, who apologized last year after using an anti-gay slur during his annual muscular dystrophy telethon, repeated a similar anti-gay slur on Australian television. A reporter asked Lewis what he thought about the sport cricket, and Lewis said, "It's a fag game." The Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, GLAAD, is calling for Lewis to apologize for his recent comments.
And that's the Week in News, brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hey guys, this is Miss Cleo. I want you to listen to Windy City Queercast.
Direct from Broadway, it's Grease, starring American Idol winner Taylor Hicks. Yes, it's Time Magazine's number one musical of the year, featuring all those songs that you love. They're all here. Grease Lightning, Summer Nights, Sandy, We Go Together, Beauty School Dropout, Hopelessly Devoted to You, and of course, You're the One That I Want.
You're the one that I want. You are the one for. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Honey, the one that I want. You are the one for. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Honey,
so come on and check out Taylor Hicks in the show The Associated Press calls the original high school musical, Grease. Get the tickets you want today.
Begins January 6th at the Auditorium Theater. Visit BroadwayInChicago.com for tickets.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club.
Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Weird.
Innovative. Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of November 3rd, 2008, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Don't miss the hilarious comedy Don't Dress for Dinner, starring Burn Notice star Jeffrey Donovan and Patricia Callenber, formerly of TV Sisters. Opens November 14th at the Royal George Theater. For tickets to Don't Dress for Dinner, go online at don'tdressfordinner.com.
Writers Theater presents Picnic by William Inge and directed by David Cromer. The Chicago Tribune calls it an intensely emotional revival, and the Chicago Sun-Times claims every performance is exquisitely shaped. For more information about Picnic at Writers Theater, log on to writerstheater.org.
American Theater Company presents Celebrity Row, written by Itamar Moses and directed by David Cromer. Based on the fact that in the late 90s, four of America's most notorious criminals were housed on the same cell block, Celebrity Row explores issues of homeland security, individual freedoms, and one of the most dazzling cliffhangers of modern drama. Playing through November 16th, tickets at atcweb.org.
Haram Iran is a controversial and mind-blowing play by J. Paul Daratani based on the true story of two Arabic boys accused of homosexual sins. Haram Iran is playing through December 9th at the Athenaeum Theater, only $20. 25% of the profits are donated to charities preventing human rights abuses in Iran. For tickets, visit Ticketmaster.com. Warning, this show contains nudity, violence, and strong political content.
Beautiful circus ring mistress Miranda Towers had it all until her world came tumbling down and things went haywire. Don't miss Haywire, presented by Helena Handbag, for murder, melodrama, and an axe-wielding Joan Crawford under the big top at the Bailiwick, 1229 West Belmont. For tickets, go to handbagproductions.org. Mention the code WCT to get $5 off each ticket.
For more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
So, Alex, gay marriage. Gay marriage was a ballot initiative. There were many ballot initiatives. What the hope is with some of these ballot initiatives, many about banning abortion, three about gay marriage, is to get the conservatives into the booth. That it worked in George Bush's first election in 2000. It did not work last night. Talk to me about California. I mean, the ballots have not all been counted. Of course, the other two states did pass their bans on gay marriage. What do you think is going to happen in California?
I think Proposition 8 is definitely going to pass. I mean, right now, even with the ballots that are out, I mean, right now at this point in time, as you and I are speaking, the ballots are out. There are still some ballots that need to be counted. But even if all of those voted against Proposition 8, it's not enough to change the percentage.
So you and Chris Ann did go after, you know, we talked about this on a podcast, and I said you need to go get legally married, you know,
and we did.
And how was that? You obviously don't feel any different, do you?
No, in the sense that no, because you know we had a ceremony 12 years ago, and so we, you know, with the dress and the aisle and the, you know, 150 of our friends and our relatives and all kinds of things. So we have been married. What we wanted to do was go down and get the license. We just wanted to go down and get the license, basically. Yeah. And it was interesting because we went down and we got the license, and as we got there and we signed it, the guy that was giving out the license said to us, well, where are you going to have your ceremony? And Chris Ann said, my wife said, no, we've already done that. We don't want to do that again. We've done it. And he said, yes, well, unfortunately, you have to do it or this isn't valid. And we kind of went, huh? What? Really? And he goes, yeah. So he goes, you got to have someone who's ordained in this state. See, we were married in Illinois.
Right.
And you have to have someone in this state, you know, do that in order for it to be legal. Hmm. So that day, which I think was Friday, and it was the only day that Chris Ann had to take off work, and, you know, nothing is open on Saturdays. We had until, you know, the end of that business day to find a reverend or someone ordained that would marry us. So we were on phones, calling friends. It was crazy. It was insane. We were in the cafeteria of the courthouse going, do you know anybody who's been to see God in the last 10? It was insane. And our friend Matt Valley was there. By the way, I have this all on video.
Is it on your vlog?
It's almost there. We're editing it now. Amy, it's the most hilarious thing you've ever seen in your life. It's hilarious.
Well, we will
but anyways,
that as soon as you have it up.
Yeah, we will. Oh, yeah, I will. And we finally found this little church through Jeff Perry, actually. I called Jeff Perry. I don't know why I called Jeff Perry, but I called Jeff Perry. And I said, help me. And he kind of went, all right. And he sort of ran to his computer and looked up a bunch of chapels. So we found this little – not a church. It was a chapel in West Hollywood, you know, right in the middle of Gaytown.
Yep.
And we went to this woman and we thought, oh, God, now we have to go through the ceremony. We really don't want to do this because we've already done this. And so we went to this woman who was called Reverend Starbuck.
I love it.
Hello.
Little Battlestar Galactica moment. For
correct.
You.
That's right. And also a great coffee place. So I'm just saying.
That's true.
So we went and she was fantastic. She was sort of a metaphysical, you know, light and love. And it was gorgeous. And we had this ceremony that lasted about 20 minutes. And I'm telling you, it was the most amazing, life-affirming. We were sobbing. She was going, I want you to speak to her and look in her eyes and hold her hands. And I'm going, bah.
Oh, no.
I was crying more than Lana Turner in Imitation of Life. It was insane.
Oh, no.
It was fantastic. And it's all on video. And I just keep saying that. Anyway, at the end of the day, we had the license and we had everything. And we were driving home. And Chris Ann and I finally got into our house by ourselves. And we realized that it was really more of a reaffirmation of our vows and why exactly we were together. And today, with this news that Proposition 8 will probably pass, she and I were just talking about this before you called. I said, there's no – and I said this to the guy when he said you have to have the ceremony. I said, you know what? That's fine because here's the deal. You people have no jurisdiction over my marriage. You never have.
Right.
You can ban – anything you can pass any law, you can amend any piece of paper. I don't care what you guys do. I have said she's my wife. She has always been my wife. There is no law in this state or this country or any country around the world that can change that.
Yeah.
And you can celebrate your victory. And I think it's great that you're celebrating this victory. I think it's great that this proposition makes you so happy that you're celebrating this victory. I think it's terrific. There is nothing you can do. Nothing. So I don't feel particularly sad that this is happening. Plus the fact that here's the other thing. The two fantastic lesbians that were first married on the courthouse here in California have already started their legal recourse.
Yeah.
So they've already started the ball rolling. Here's the deal, kids. This thing is going to happen. It is going to happen.
Yeah.
It's not a question of if, it's a question of when.
Right. And I here is my big disconnect. And here is the moment when I take my little litmus test of equality and how last night we celebrated equality and last night we celebrated civil rights and last night we celebrated the healing of our country and the possibility of our country. And it doesn't negate what happened with these propositions in these three states. But I do want to acknowledge and I do want to state very clearly that African Americans greatly, like 67% in the state of California, voted for Proposition 8.
That's
and
right.
And there is this disconnect, and we saw it with Colin Powell in 92, was it 92? Yes, 92 with Bill Clinton with Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Mm-hmm. And we are seeing it again on the night when our country is proudest. We are still seeing the bigotry. We are still seeing the fear and we are still seeing the inequality. And, you know, and part of that for me is hopeful because we still have things to learn. We still have room to grow. And once we have that wave of African-American people who finally get it and Hispanic people who finally get it and women who finally get it, you know, I mean, I am constantly reminded of a spiritual man named Reverend Peter Gomes, who is the head of the Divinity Department at Harvard. He was raised in the Baptist Church. He is an Anglican minister now. He is African American and he is a gay man. And he runs the Divinity Department at Harvard. And he has written a couple of books. And one was one of the first books that I gave my father when I came out to him. And he struggled so much religiously and spiritually with homosexuality. And that's what it is with the black community, with the Hispanic community. You know, it goes down to conservative religious ties. And he takes the Bible chapter by chapter and talks about, you know, women and the Bible and women in religion and how they have been displaced. The civil rights movement around organized religion is what I'm essentially talking about. You know, how when my mother was raised in Tennessee, it was, you know, the United Methodist Church and the United Methodist Church of the South. And one was segregated and one wasn't, you know. And talks about our Jewish brothers and sisters and the bigotry there. And one of his final chapters in this book, which I highly recommend to anybody GLBT and interested in any kind of spiritual or the theological argument that we confront politically. You know, this is exactly what this is. It's a theological and political argument. His final chapter is Homosexuality, the Last Great last great frontier of bigotry in religion. And this is a man who's, you know, besides being a woman, his foot is in a lot of these, you know, areas. And he writes so beautifully about it. And I truly think, well, it's good to know what's on the horizon. It's good to know where we're headed. It's good to know what the playing field is. And that if we can tap into what African Americans felt last night as a people, and we're a very young movement. I mean, we're a young, visible, vocal, organized, politicized movement as opposed to the African-American movement. And if we can connect with them on that level, it will be the when and not the if. But just, you know, well, it's a real reality check to me when I see that 60% of more than 60% of African-Americans voted for Proposition 8.
Yeah.
Huge.
Well, here, let me actually, I just looked up online the actual numbers. Here are the actual numbers. 70% of African-American voters approved Prop 8.
Yep.
53% of Latino voters and 49% of white voters and 49% of Asian voters. Those are the numbers.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. Are you familiar with Dan Savage?
Yeah, very much, Dan. I've had him on the show, not on the Queercast, but I've interviewed him before.
He has a fantastic quote here, and I'm looking for it. Here's what he says. I do know this. I'm done pretending that the handful of racist gay white men out there, and they're out there, and I think they're scum, are a bigger problem for African Americans, gay and straight, than the huge numbers of homophobic African Americans are for gay Americans, whatever their color.
I agree.
It's interesting. I mean, you know, there's this huge, and here's the thing. And, you know, and I'm an optimist.
Yeah.
So here's how I look at it. Obama is a massive step in the right direction. And Obama has said very clearly, I believe marriage is for a man and a woman. He has said that. He makes no bones about how he feels about that. So we know that.
But he also says in his book, history books will probably prove me wrong on my stance with gay and lesbian people.
Right. And he knows.
And he disagrees with Michelle. They disagree on that.
Yeah. That woman scares the hell out of me. I just have to say that. That woman scares the hell out of me. She terrified. And I don't mean that in a good way. I mean in a Nancy Reagan way. That woman scares the bejesus out of me. I'm telling you right now, that woman is nuts.
She's a linebacker.
She's nuts. That woman is cuckoo. She's power hungry. She seems divisive to me. There is something really troubling about Michelle Obama, and I just want to go on record as saying that.
All right, you say that. We'll talk about that as time reveals. I disagree with you, but I've always said though they're the Black Clintons. So you know we know where that was. You know, when she entered the
Yeah, line, so. I think Hillary most definitely had political aspirations. I don't think Michelle has political aspirations. I think there's something else going on. And I'm telling you right now, that woman is cuckoo. She is cuckoo.
All right. I disagree with you on that count, but we'll see. Time will tell. We will have all spotlights on it. You know, I want to end with this because we need to wrap up. But, you know, there were opportunities for hateful speech and fear tactics to lose last night. And there were many, many, many important Senate races and House races, but definitely one I was keeping my eye on, because when you are in Tennessee, and I was on the border of Tennessee, Georgia, North Carolina, and Alabama, my town, you know, if you drive 40 minutes, you can practically be in all four of those states.
Yeah.
Where, there's like one point where the three states connect, and that's right outside of my town as well. But a very important race. Well, there was one in Georgia that many people were watching, the Saxby Chambliss race, which I don't even know if it's been even announced still in Georgia. But the fact that Hagan beat Dole in North Carolina with horrible attack ads Hagan, you know, that Elizabeth Dole was running, of like, you know, Hagan is once a godless country, and she's a member of a church, and she always has been a member of like a United Methodist or Episcopalian church, you know, saying these really horrible, hateful, this word godless that came up a lot. And I thought, you know what, I really hope using that kind of tactic, which means you have no leg to stand on, you know, gets you nowhere. And it didn't. And that was a turned seat for us in the Senate, and a really, you know, just said a lot. You know, fear and hate did not win with the presidency, and it did not win many, many times last night in the Congress, and that is a good thing. So we will see how it all plays out in the transition. And
that's right. And, you know, and like I said, having Obama as president, and as much as I'd mistrust Michelle, having her as first lady, just that happening is a huge, massive step in the right direction. And I use the word right, in the right, correct direction for the United States of America to go. And I truly believe that the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender movement is just a couple of paces behind. Because even though Proposition 8 went through, it went through by a smaller margin. And that's what we have to remember. That is, the world is changing, and the United States certainly is with it. It's a miraculous day. It's a miracle of a freaking day.
It's a miracle day. Anything is possible, and I'm so
glad
to...
Glinda is going to come down in her bubble and wave her magic wand, and all of us are going to go back to Oz, and everything's going to be great.
She's going to look at Michelle Obama and go, are you a good witch or a bad witch?
And we'll find out. Michelle's going to go, get out of my way. You're in my light.
Oh, Alex, thanks for doing the election show with me. I knew we would have some fun, and I'm glad we are victorious on this day of days. And when we come back next week, we'll have shows with Mitchell Fain. Mitchell and I are going to go out with some adventure travel, and we'll also be talking about whatever the hell is going on in the GLBT world. So we'll talk to you next time.
Bye!
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light keeps it coming. Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, Amy Wooten, news editor, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast. Queer and now.